Welcome to What is Going Ohm's Conversations with Money Show, where you get to learn the secrets of how love and money are interlinked in ways you never imagined, and transform your relationship with money for good. Here are your hosts, Sandy Sedgbeer and Sarah McCrum.
Hello, and welcome to What is Going Ohm's new Conversations with Money Show. A new monthly series co-presented by me and energy and money consciousness coach, Sarah McCrum. This series is both an experiment and a gift to you in that it's part discussion and part transformational free course designed to help you dismantle your misconceptions about money and release your fears and issues around it. So we encourage you to listen to the entire series because I can guarantee it will forever alter the way you think about and relate to money. And in the process, it's going to change the way that money shows up for you in your life. If you didn't listen to the interview that I did with Sarah back in July, I do encourage you to find the podcast in the archives. But in the meantime, here's a little bit of information about Sarah McCrum so you know why I asked her to join me in this experiment. Sarah's been an energy coach for 20 years, working with and helping entrepreneurs, conscious business owners, and game changers master their personal energy. She's the author of Love Money, Money Loves You, which provides much of the inspiration for the Consciousness of Money programs. She's also a co-founder of Love2, an integrated network of sustainable businesses that creates opportunities for people to solve meaningful challenges by doing what they love. I love that. Trust me, no one knows money better than Sarah McCrum does. She ought to, because she's been talking to money for years and money is always eager to answer her. And that's why people are flocking to her Conscious of Money seminars, workshops and courses. So, Sarah, I am so happy that you agreed to join me in this experiment because I know how busy you are. And there have been a few topics, you know, that I feel strongly enough about to invite an expert to join me on a series of shows. But Conversations with Money is different because as informal and informative as our conversations with and about money are going to be, it has the same aim and potential transformational outcomes as your courses. So tell us, how do you see this unfolding over the next 6 months and what benefits can our listeners anticipate?
Thank you, Sandy. I'm also delighted to be a part of this experiment. It's always interesting to find different ways of sharing this message about money that really changes your life from the inside out. I think the most important thing here is that my work around money didn't arise out of me being a financial advisor or a super successful entrepreneur who's now cracked the code of money, the kind of people who usually teach about money. My work arose, as you mentioned, rather in passing, out of a dialogue with money, which was literally that. It was me having a conversation, essentially, with the energy of money itself over quite a long period, and then putting into practice what I learned from that conversation, because what I learned was extraordinarily different from anything that I'd learned anywhere else. And it was so different that it really took me time to get to grips with the heart of the message. Because this was money. If you think of money as energy, it was the energy of money talking to me or talking through me. I was writing most of the time. Apparently sharing a message that it wanted me to pass on to other people, which is clearly what I'm doing now. And suggesting that we've really got it all wrong about money, that we've terribly misunderstood what it is. And that when we understand what it really is and how it really works, that allows us to relax. It allows us to enjoy work a lot more than most people do. It allows us to create way more of what we want and way less of what we don't want in our lives. And it allows us to operate around money in a very different way. And these are the things that I've actually found have happened for me and continue to happen. It's an expanding process, and have happened for the people who I've worked with. And I think one of the things that's really special to draw attention to here, because of the format in which we're communicating here through radio, is that most of the change comes simply from being exposed to both the energy and the ideas, the things that money told me. So just by listening, you start to experience things differently. And you don't need to go and study in the same way as we do with traditional learning. You need to expose yourself. You need to allow it to melt into you. And something changes deep inside you. And that actually changes you forever. That's the thing, is there's an energy about it and an immersion in that energy which plants seeds inside you, which turn into something in your life.
You know, it's interesting because one of the big buzzwords at the moment is disruptor. People are calling themselves disruptors. And, you know, I've always had this little thing that I talk about that I discovered once, which is when you hear something that is so fundamental and so at odds with everything you've ever believed, but really just a piece of absolute truth that you can't not recognize in that moment, it's like the brain goes into freeze mode. It disrupts the patterns of how of your thinking, and you can never go back and think the same way again, because it, you know, it's a bit like an NLP, you know, pattern interrupt program, where you scratch the record and suddenly you can't go down that same neural pathway of thinking again. And this is what I have found, you know, reading your book, speaking to you before, working with you with money, that's what happens to me, is that it completely disrupts the patterns. And that's the goal that I am holding for our listeners over the next 6 months, because I am, you know, I know it can be done.
Yes, actually, somebody once wrote about my book, once you've seen it, you can't unsee it, which is the same thing as you're describing. It's like, yeah, you start to see money in a different way, and you can never really go back to where you were before. It's that you have to keep moving forward once you've seen it.
Yeah. It's like all those things, you hear all these phrases all the time, and they become quite trite because they're so overused, and that's because they're true. But they then you hear it one day in a different way, and as someone once described that, now you've got it in the muscle, and once it's in the muscle, that's it. It's there. It's locked in.
Yes, I actually feel that that's very much what my work is about. I meet a lot of people who have it in the clouds. And I meet a lot of people who have it in the head. So I work with business owners on the whole, and some of them are very spiritual and some of them are very material, the two extremes. And the material ones tend to have it in the head a lot. They think a lot about money and they worry a lot about money, but they don't know how to relate to it in the way that I discovered. And the spiritual people have it in the clouds, and they tell me, I can feel the money, I can feel the energy, but there's none of it in their bank account. And there's a disconnect in both areas. And so for me, I think a lot of my work has been bringing those two together. How do we unite the physical material world? Because the honest truth is, we need cash. We need money in the bank account to pay the bills. It's just part of our everyday life. It's everywhere. We can't get out of bed without engaging with that energy at some level, to put a pair of shoes on, for example, which we probably had to buy. And at the same time, so how do we unite that very material part with this very ephemeral, intangible energy that, interestingly, bankers talk about? They know that money is energy because they see these flows of movement around the world. And they know it at some level, but they don't have the language of what energy is really all about. So how do we bring those two together to create something that actually works? It works at a practical level, and it makes you feel good at the same time, because so often people don't feel good around money.
No, it's very scary. So let's, each, you know, month we're going to kind of take a different aspect of this. Let's start with love, because those words I want you to love me, were the first words that came out of your pen when you started writing down this conversation that you had with money. And it was one of the things that really grabbed me in your book, which we spoke about in our previous interview, when I said I'd always suspected that love and money were the same energy. So tell us how money and love interlinked in ways that few of us would have imagined.
Well, essentially, money is part of life. If we really go to the core of it, money is made of the same thing as everything else is made of in life. The same as what you and I are made of, the same as what the cupboard door in my office is made of, the same as what the trees and the sky is made of, which is energy. And I actually remember the day when I recognized for the first time, I really saw that all of that energy that creates everything, that forms everything, is love. In fact, it is an energy of love. So in a funny kind of way, saying money is connected with love is saying something that even Jesus might have said, or some Buddhist master who's talking about love and compassion. It's not really rocket science, but it is rocket science to put it in the context of money, because somehow even religions have put money aside from love. So I think that it's what's important about this is really contemplating the possibility that money is made of the same thing as everything else, and that therefore it really is energy. And from what I know, in my personal experience, and what I see more and more people recognizing, that energy really is an energy of love. And if that is the case, and I didn't fully believe it when I first wrote it, it's like, oh, that's nice, that's interesting, but does it really work? I had to go and test it. I have found, both for myself and with other people, that it actually works. And to contemplate and reflect again and again and again on what does that mean to say that money is energy and that energy is love? How does that change my relationship with money? How does that change me? How does that change the way I think about money? I feel about it? How does it change the way I act around it? How does it change the way I do business, or I pay for things, I invest in things, all the things we do with money? And it's through that contemplation, it's through engaging with that message again and again, because I don't think it's easy to get it, you know, in a flash. You might resonate with it in a flash. It might feel, wow, that's true. But to get it in your muscle, as you say, to know it and to live it and to breathe it, that takes time, and you have to come back to it again and again and again.
Really, I mean, it's the mindset more than anything, isn't it? That's what it appears to me. I mean, I remember having a conversation with money, and I literally sat down in a chair and visualized money being in the chair opposite. And, you know, as if I was talking to a friend, and I said to money, so come on then, where have you been all my life? And it said, right here beside you, you know, you just haven't noticed me. And that was like that's not how I expected this conversation to go. And the thought of money as a friend, as a companion, as some, you know, energy, that's entity that's walking along beside me, was just really hard to get my head around.
Yes, I think it is really hard. Sometimes people say to me, especially more the slightly more hard-nosed material end of people, they just say literally that, I can't get my head around money being connected with love. But through writing the book and being exposed to this message over and over again, I came to see that when we talk about energy, I used to think about energy being a bit like a fluffy cloud, kind of just like this big universal cloud of something. I was very vague about it. And more I've come to realize that in a way, energy is form. It has its own form. It's a different kind of form that sits behind our 3D material form. And that form takes all kinds of shapes. And I honestly see money now a bit like a kind of department of almost like beings. They might not really be beings, but they might really like, but all these highly organized movements and organization and system that works behind the scenes on our planet and that serves us to create, to share our gifts with each other, to be rewarded for things. It serves us in our way of exchanging and so sharing who we are with other people. And however odd that sounds, in a way, I think that's more real and more likely than most of the other descriptions that we have of money. And it seems to operate that way. So I often teach people to have a conversation with money because that's what I did, essentially. And it's remarkable because they often ask questions like you did. And money says things like, I'm here, I've been waiting for you. Or it says, they start to think about their relationship with money and they realize that it's like a neighbor who they've never spoken to, they've never invited to dinner, and the gate between their properties is dusty and rusty and kind of you can't even open it, it's covered with brambles. I hear all these stories all the time of the kind of relationship people have had with money. Sometimes it's one of just total rejection. Or fear, you know, like, I want it. I think this is the biggest problem for us. Somewhere inside ourselves, we know that life can be abundant and we desire abundance. We wish for it with our heart. And yet we are programmed with messages that say that the most spiritual person or the most good person is a monk with a begging bowl, that a rich man can't go to heaven. There's a worship of the poor and of poverty that comes through some religious messaging. And so we're torn because inside ourselves we have this natural expansiveness and wish to experience a rich life. And we have to cut that off at the root in case it makes us into an evil person. And that really goes to the heart of the contradiction and the dilemma that most people hold about money.
These are the things that we have to unravel. You're listening to What Is Going On's new Conversations with Money show with me, Sandy Sedgbear.
And me, Sarah McCrum.
Still to come, how money operates behind our physical world, money and self-love. Is there a connection? And why is it that women especially have such a difficult time charging what they're worth? We'll be back with more after the break.
The future of internet radio is here. Om Times Radio. IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free. AscendingHearts.com.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of Om Time's flagship radio show, What Is Going On. As a long-time editor, book judge, spiritual magazine publisher and radio host, I've read thousands of books and interviewed hundreds of authors and teachers, so I know what's worth reading and what isn't. Now, with the spiritual book market growing increasingly crowded, more and more people are seeking my help in finding the authentic voices, the empowering tools, and the genuine skip the BS guidance that will make the most difference to their spiritual development. So I decided to make it easier by bringing my knowledge, experience, and considerable network of contacts together in the No BS Spiritual Book Club. There are no ads, no joining fees, no obligations, and no BS. just an ever-growing library compiled by recognisable and respected names of the 10 best books that help them the most on their journeys, plus free book excerpts, audios and live video interviews where you can quiz them about their spiritual journeys and their 10 best list choices. Your time and money are valuable, your spiritual journey even more so. If you're looking for genuine guidance from people who have walked this path before you, check out sedgbeer.com. Click on the No BS Spiritual Book Club tab and join the club. That's sedgbeer.com, S-E-D-G-B-E-E-R.com. I'll see you there.
I am Fidel Nshombo. I was born in a city called Bukavu in the Congo. We were a loving family, and then, boom! Everything that I had disappeared in a single day.
People think that when you are a refugee and they resettle to America, and all your problems are done. They don't understand that that's the beginning of everything.
I was not born a refugee. I was made one.
It's time we welcome refugee families with open arms. Learn more at embracerefugees.org, brought to you by the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Sarah, before we talk about money and self-love, I think you could give us a quick insight, if there's any such thing, into how money operates behind our physical world and what happens when we experience guilt, fear and worry around our finances.
Yes, if you imagine money as being an energy that is constantly connected with us and kind of monitoring what goes on inside us. So when we wish for something, that's what stimulates money to go into action, because it's kind of like a wish fulfillment system or a delivery system. When we have shame or guilt or fear around money, we tend to do the absolute opposite of wishing. We either say things like, oh, I'm such a bad person, I don't deserve any of that, which means we're just saying, don't give me anything that I would really like. Or we say, I feel so ashamed of myself, I'm not worthy, or I'm not lovable. And we cut ourselves off from the source of the generosity of life. Money, the energy of money, is the expression of the generosity of life. And we don't realize usually that we're doing that, but that is literally like sending an instruction to the energy of money to not deliver on all your heartfelt wishes. And unfortunately, we tend to live in shame and guilt for years and years because we haven't often learned any better, and it can be deeply suppressed. So it's operating well below the surface. What changes when you allow yourself to recognize that you are as valuable a piece of life as any other piece of life, no more and no less? You are a part of that love, that energy of love that I talked about. You are made of love. You're simply a part of it, and therefore it's not about whether you're deserving or not, or whether you're worthy or not. It's simply, that's what you are, it's what you're made of. And when you can open up to that and say, whatever I've done in my life, I've messed up, we've all messed up, we've all done things that we wish we hadn't done to ourselves and to other people. But if you can forgive yourself for that and allow yourself to open to the fact that love is the essence of who you are, and you can increasingly express that, and that it is not only possible, but it is also the right thing to allow love into yourself, to actually allow yourself to love yourself as a part of life, for your uniqueness, for the gift that you are, both to the people that you've hurt and also to the people that you love. You're actually a gift to all of them, although not always the gift you'd like to be. And when you sort of open up that crack to self-love and let it in, and I'm not really talking about, oh yes, I have a bath with essential oils. That might be it for you, but it's not really that level I'm talking about. I'm talking about actually, again, contemplating that if you love yourself, you're going to be more generous to yourself. You're going to give more to yourself. You're going to allow yourself to receive more. That's going to allow you to give more to others, to be more generous to others. And that makes you feel good. You can't actually be generous and have all the good feelings that go with that if you don't receive. A world where we give all the time and don't receive is a world that is completely stuffed basically. It doesn't work because nobody accepts our gifts, and there's no satisfaction in giving to somebody who rejects what you give. So, no, I don't want that. I don't like to receive anything. So we have to kind of get real about this and recognize that receiving and allowing yourself to receive is a part of experiencing a good life. It's a part of feeling good about life. It's a part of expressing your purpose and expressing who you are. And we were never meant to cut ourselves off from the generosity of life. So to me, that's what self-love is really about. It's about letting in what you already are and expressing that, experiencing it.
What about self-image? I mean, you know, some people will say, yes, of course, I love myself, but really they harbour a self-image, you know, that is completely at odds with that. I mean, is there a connection there? And if there is, how can we practically begin to change that?
Yes, there is definitely a connection there. I often reflect on the fact that the most difficult thing is to love the parts of myself that I don't love. You know, and that is self-image to some extent. There are aspects that I've learned from when I was a very small girl that are not the way girls are supposed to be, for example. We've all learnt what's beautiful and what's acceptable in our society, and we all have parts that we believe are somehow don't quite fit. They're not acceptable, they're not beautiful, they're not whatever they should be. And so that kind of steeps itself into our consciousness, and then we hold this self-image, which is the absolute opposite of what I was just describing in terms of self-love. So in terms of how to get over that, there are a couple of things I think that are really helpful. One is to, when you come across a part of yourself that you really clearly don't like very much, maybe you've done something that you wish you hadn't done, and maybe you've done it over and over again. You know, again, you've shouted at your partner when they weren't really doing anything wrong. You've lost it, you've got reactive, or you burst into tears and you're crying and playing the victim again. You know, these things that we do and we find ourselves doing over and over again. Instead of being really hard on yourself and saying, oh, I've done it again, I'm such a bad person, and building that negative self-image, there's a moment in there where you can disrupt your pattern and you can say, okay, I did that. I wish I hadn't done that. I did it somehow because in that moment I didn't know how to do any better, even if I think I do. I'm like a child who's learning to walk in this relationship thing. I'm clearly not so amazing at relationship as I perhaps thought I was. I need to learn some more, but I'm not going to be hard on myself. I'm just going to give myself permission to learn and to grow. I'm going to fall over probably many more times, just like the child learning to walk. And I'm going to say, that's fine. It's all right. I forgive myself for falling over. I'm going to pick myself up and I'm going to just go out there and be better next time. And what I've found is when I bring in kindness to myself, self-forgiveness, and again, this is self-love, that's how I get to love the bits that I don't love about myself. I have to hold myself in innocence, if you like, and not make myself wrong and guilty and shamed and all those really harsh judgments, because it just doesn't work. It makes the self-image worse, and then you have more of a struggle to love yourself. And you're onto a complete loser that way. We have to change that pattern. And that's something that I think we'll talk about more in a future episode, Sandy, because it really touches into the whole question of value, which is right at the heart of money. How do I value myself? How do other people value me? How do I value them? How do I value my product or service? It's all very fascinating territory that sits alongside the self-love and the self-image question, and worth delving much more deeply into.
Absolutely. You know, I remember some years ago, something that actually helped me, and I think as you're speaking, I'm thinking, oh, I could apply that to money very easily, and self-love as well, about I think it was Debbie Ford had written about it. Couples in a relationship, you know, often will argue about certain traits that the other one has, you know, irritating mannerisms or whatever. And she said that if we could learn to, instead of accusing somebody and, oh, there you are, you're doing that again, and it really annoys me, if we could kind of place a almost like a little identity of, well, that's a little piece of them that hasn't totally grown up, or it might be, you know, moaning Molly, let's give them a little name or something, that's that small part of you. And when you realize it is a small part of you that needs a little bit of love, that it's, you know, it's not, it takes some of that sting out of it. It takes some of that, you know, the anger, and you can actually be more compassionate about that small part of you that is still learning and growing.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the fascinating things that I've learned, and I really learned this because money pushed me so much to explore what love is, and it wasn't something I felt very good at, that's for sure. I discovered that when my husband, for example, is complaining, sometimes he just goes on one of those kind of like complaining about everything. And you know what I do in that situation? If I'm really honest and I listen to myself, if I get irritated by the complaining, I'm complaining inside my mind about his complaining. And so I'm actually doing exactly the same as he's doing, but I'm being self-righteous about it. Like, you shouldn't complain. I'm so sick of your complaining. Why are you complaining so much? And there I am whinging away at him in exactly the way he's whinging away at life. And it's like, oh my goodness. I think yes. This is something extraordinarily valuable in looking at whatever is triggering you, because for sure you are the same.
Yeah, absolutely. That is a good one. I really like that. Why do you think it is that women especially have such a difficult time, you know, asking for money, charging what they're worth, feeling that they deserve to have it even?
Well, some of it's lack of practice. If you've spent quite a few years of your life fundamentally focused on children, the interesting thing is that you're essentially running a small business when you do that. You are managing a budget, you're managing income, whether it comes through your partner or you're earning it, you're actually managing an income. And you do at some level have to ask for money, but there are so many assumptions and implications in it that it gets rather confused. And so I think women don't recognize the skills that they build up doing those alternative things that are so fundamental to their life and are engaging with money all the time, but are not fully recognized in the mainstream. So I think this goes also to the question about value. We have managed to develop a society that publicly values certain types of behavior. So doing business of many different kinds is publicly valued, whereas caring, educating, healing, nurturing has not been very publicly valued. Our carers and healers and nurturers tend to be very poorly paid, whereas the people who do things that are more assertive and sometimes more aggressive have been more highly paid. But I'm seeing a shift in that, and I'm working with people who are totally committed to creating ways where people who do things that have not been traditionally valued but bring tremendous value to our society can be rewarded, just like the people are who go out and create products and services that are highly valued. So I think that we're ready for a shift, because we are recognizing that, for example, how you bring up children is probably the most important thing. The most important contribution in the entirety of our society, because it affects everything that those children are able to do when they're adults. It affects business, it affects the economy, it affects all the things we currently think are important, our environment. So I think a shift is coming, but it takes practice to be able to ask for what you want. And if you're used to denying it or putting other people first all the time, you don't practice it very much.
No. And, you know, I mean, it's what, 100, 120 years now since women were allowed to have money of their own. I mean, before then, it was very much, if you married a man, all your money was his, and you weren't deemed capable of having the mind power to be able to manage that sensibly and responsibly. So I guess...
It's unbelievable.
Yes, isn't it?
It's unbelievable, but yes, I mean, if you put it in that context, I think that just gives us as women a really strong motivation to say, I'm going to learn how to do this, and I'm going to learn how to do this a way that feels good to me. So I'm not going to do it in a way that doesn't feel good, that turns me into a man or turns me into somebody who acts in ways that I don't respect. Because I often find with women, they don't like a lot of the ways that people act around money. So I think it just says, find the way that works for you.
Yeah, and you know what? We owe it to the suffragettes who fought for us to have the right to have our own money, you know, to do exactly that and move beyond some of our issues around it.
Yeah, this is our fight. This is the fight now. Fight for something good rather than fighting against something. We don't need to reject anything anymore, but we can step into way more powerful relationships with money.
Yeah. You're listening to What Is Going On's Conversations with Money show with me, Sandy Sedgbeer.
And me, Sarah McCrum.
And still to come, money and relationships. Relationships with yourself and with others. We'll be back with more after the break.
The cutting edge of conscious radio, Om Times Radio, IOM FM. Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. Om Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single Om Times endeavor. Host your show with Om Times Radio Network.
Hello, I'm Lisa Barry. Join me every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time for Light on Living, a chance to see new, hear different, and feel more as I shine the spotlight on all the ways to lighten the load of life's challenges. Light on Living is your link to that new way you're looking for, that new understanding that will enhance your life, and that positive connection that will support your growth. So join me, and you'll gain insight and start to see things in a new way that motivates you.
Imagine being fired because of who you love. Imagine being denied medical treatment because of who you marry. Imagine being evicted because of who you are. Millions of Americans don't have to imagine this. They have to live it. Because in 31 states, it's legal to discriminate against LGBT people. Get the facts at beyondido.org. Brought to you by the Gill Foundation and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Sarah, we've been talking about our relationship with money. What about money in our relationship with others?
Well, that's a really interesting question because so many relationships, actually, in so many relationships, money is a very important factor. It's often the cause of relationship breakups, the cause of arguments, the cause of really significant tension. And at the same time, what I found, which surprised me, probably shouldn't have surprised me if I think back on it, is that the way we relate with money tends to be very similar to the way we relate with other people. The more you go into it, the more you see the same patterns emerging. The way I relate with my husband, the way I relate with money, the way I relate with life, it's all remarkably similar. And so it's a very fascinating inquiry because when you open up your relationship with money, actually what happens is it opens up your relationships with other people and with life at the same time because we're engaging with the energy of love.
I mean, you know, as you said, it is one of the biggest, subjects of, contention between sex and money, they always say. They're things that people are going to argue over. And I'm thinking about, you know, how I operate in the world with money and how I operate in relationships. And I think, as you said earlier in the show, you know, I'm very much one of those people who tends to, no, let me give it all to you and I'm not going to receive anything, you know. And that is something that ever since our first conversation last year, I am paying a lot of attention to.
Interesting. Yes, I'm more of the type, like, I'm kind of full in for a little while and then I get distracted and something else is more important for me, and then I start to see the warning signs. It's the same with money, it's the same with my husband. It's like, oh, they're feeling a bit neglected, and then I sort of, if it feels uncomfortable, and I come back in and it's like I turn all the lights on again and I'm all in. So that's what I have to watch a lot. I easily just get pulled into other things rather than having a really steady, stable, loving relationship.
In your courses, I mean, do you have an exercise where, you know, you give people these list of questions that they can ask themselves or ask money, you know, on just these kinds of issues? You know, what is it I do that you don't like, money? You know, what is it I do in my relationship that I do to you?
Yes, yes, I actually... I ask a lot of questions, both live when I'm doing live stuff in courses, and increasingly questions that people can journal, or what I love to see is when people discuss it with somebody else. I think discussion of these things is incredibly valuable, because everyone's looking for a money formula, but actually the formula doesn't seem to work. What works is becoming more conscious around money, and reflecting and putting things into action, and then observing what happens, and reflecting and putting things into action and observing what happens. And so that's what I found. And then the other thing that is really important is developing your energetic connection with money so that you can actually feel it. I think to be able to feel it as a presence in your life is really game changing, because it becomes more real to you then. It's not just something in your head, not just an idea.
How do you do that?
Shall I show you?
Yes.
Okay. Let's take a few minutes and actually feel the presence of money. So I'm going to recommend that you close your eyes if you can and sit quietly. And obviously, if you're driving, you can still feel the presence, okay? So you can do this anywhere, but be sensible about it, please. Breathe into your lower belly so that you center yourself. Your lower belly is your center of gravity. And allow yourself to relax. Not sleepy relaxation, very awake relaxation. So your whole body is relaxing. And as you relax, your energy channels open up. You become more open. When you're more open, you're able to receive the energy of money or any kind of energy. When you're closed and tense, you don't receive it. And I'm going to literally invite the energy of money to be present to everybody who's listening to this show. And I invite you simply to sense at a subtle level, to sense deeply what's happening. What's happening inside you? What are you feeling? What are you feeling all around you? Can you feel this presence, a very beautiful, soft, loving, generous presence of energy that's in your energy field right now? It's both inside you and it's all around you. Can you feel the shift, the subtle shift, as you pay attention to it very lightly? allowing yourself to feel the presence of the energy of money? Can you feel how relaxing it is? Can you maybe feel the subtle texture of it? Or color? Or deep knowing of it? This is an energy that you know in your soul, in the depths of your being. So pay attention to it. Feel it. Experience it in your body and in your environment. It's a real, tangible presence. It's an exquisitely beautiful energy. And it's always present in your life. It's always available to you. Its purpose is to serve your wishes. So give it space. Give it space in your life. Receive it. Accept it. Love it. And play with it. This is the energy of money. And the energy of money is the energy of love. And thank you. I hope that you could feel something tangible, something subtle but real, that is in your energy field and is everywhere in the universe, and that is always, always accessible to you.
Thank you, Sarah. You know, it's interesting. I remember some years ago somebody saying to me, I'm very good at visualization. I've always been able to, you know, picture things, and I've always known that if the picture is cloudy, then it's not something that's particularly close to me, or it's not something that's necessarily grounded and concrete yet. And if it's very clear, then it's there. And someone once said, you know, try this exercise. Imagine yourself winning the lottery, and, you know, what kind of picture do you get? And I was horrified because I couldn't get a picture. It was so cloudy. It was barely, you know, you could barely see it, barely visible. And that made me think quite deeply about, wow, what's going on there that you can't even, you know, see that as a possibility in your field. I can now, of course. But as you were talking, what I saw was this little round gold coin with head and arms and legs and very, very jolly smile on its face. And it's kind of like taken up position right next to me as my companion. So I think I'm going to be walking around with a little gold coin on legs right next to me.
I love hearing the pictures that people get when we do this kind of thing. I think something, I really want to pick something up in there that you said, Sandy, because some people are visual. I think that it was probably quite a good thing that you couldn't imagine winning the lottery. First of all, it's not, if it happens, it happens, but it's not the foundation for a healthy relationship with money. The foundation for a healthy relationship with money is something that is ongoing and where you are giving value. So there's a genuine exchange going on, and you are growing because of the value that you're giving, and you're being rewarded, essentially. You're able to ask for what you want and receive what you want, because that creates a really beautiful relationship with money and with life when we have that. But what I want to say is that Many people don't visualize. It's something I've come to learn. Some people are really good at visualizing and really good at manifesting what they visualize. And some people are not. For example, I'm not. I never visualize anything. So there are many different ways to experience this kind of thing. You might be more of a feeling person, very sensory sort of person. You might be more of the conversational person. So you hear voices talking inside your head, like the voice of money talking. I'm more of a deep knowing type of person. It's like a subtle sensing of something that I know in my essence. That's the best way that I can describe it. And there are so many ways of doing this, so many ways of communicating and communing with money. Yes, I think that's useful to be aware of, because sometimes people get really upset. They think, oh, I couldn't talk to money, or money didn't talk to me, or I didn't feel something. And if that's your experience, then that's rather like saying, oh, well, I haven't got a boyfriend. I never get a boyfriend. There's only one thing to do, which is to open yourself up and have another go. Put yourself out there. Takes a bit of practice. Even boyfriends take practice. And learn how to relate with this energy. Okay, I think that's a really important thing, because some people find it so easy. You're obviously one of those, Sandy, and some people actually find it really hard.
Good point. And it's interesting what you said, the caution you gave there, because, you know, about winning the lottery. I mean, because, you know, it's more often the case that people who win the lottery end up losing all their money within a very short amount of time. So they haven't obviously mended their relationship with money just by having it.
Yes, and one of the things that I find a lot of people who come to work with me are attracted by the expectation of miracles. And yes, miracles happen, for sure. I've experienced many of them, and I've seen many people experience them. They're not really miracles, if you understand more about money. They are a part of the way that money works. But there's a lottery mentality that tends to go with people not having much money, where they just want, it's like they're saying, I just want the sun to shine and the sky to be blue and me to live on the beach for the rest of my life, and I'll never have another problem. There'll never be rain, there'll never be clouds, and my life is going to be okay then. And as long as I do the right thing, and I'm trying to figure out what the right thing is, that's what will happen. And that's a completely false promise in life. Because the honest truth is, the more money you have, the more responsibility you have, the more choices you need to make, the more you need to engage with life. It's completely the opposite of sitting on the beach in the sunshine, actually. Mm. It's beautiful, and it's fascinating, and it's challenging, and you're able to solve bigger and bigger problems, but it is not the answer to take all problems away. You actually make more money by solving more problems for more people.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And yes, having money is a responsibility, and it does create a little bit more focus, attention, and work, accountability, etc. Very quickly, before we close, you have said that you found that money travels on lines of trust, relaxation, and enjoyment to people who can use it. What can we do if we're still in that place of not entirely trusting, not entirely relaxed, or enjoying it all?
Being a human being. I think what I would actually like to do is I'd like to offer, I've made some recordings which help you to do that, because you need to practice. And what I'd like to do is offer a really special recording which was created in a studio with a musician. So the music helps you to open your heart and step into this energy of money more directly, with my words leading you like I did a little while ago. I'd actually like to offer you one of those so that you can try it out. And I'll put it on a special link, which will be sarahmccrum.com/om1, O-M number one. And there you'll be able to download it, and that will give you something to practice while you're getting used to this.
Good. That's wonderful. Thank you so much for that. And before we close, can you just give our listeners details of where they can find out more about you and anything that you're currently doing that might be useful to them?
Thank you, Sandy. Yes, the best place always is my website, which is my name, Sarah McCrum, Sarah with an H, MCCRUM.com.
Thanks. So here's a question for you all. If you could ask money a question, what would it be? Think about that over the coming month and send your answers to me and Sarah, care of sandy.sandysedgebeershow@gmail.com. That's about it for now. Thank you for joining our conversation with money today. I hope you'll be back with us on February the 6th. In the meantime, you can check out my website and, of course, my spiritual book club at sedgebeer.com. And I will personally be back next week with another episode of What Is Going On. In the meantime, it's goodbye from me, Sandy Sedgebeer.
And goodbye from me, Sarah McCrum.